Session number 21626, Reel 2.
Joe Eakins, Reel 2.
The tank landing craft leaked, so part of the time we were bailing out, which wasn't very good. But when we got over the other side, it was, to me, surprisingly clear. We didn't have to land in too deep water, so we were able to drive off and drive straight up the beach and out into the bridgehead, which was still quite small. But again, and that time, that was when I got the impression that nobody, and I mean nobody, knew what they were doing or what were happening or anything. And you just went on, and that impression stayed with me right the way through the war.
You mean of disorganisation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, little people doing their own thing in little bits because there weren't any direction and nobody knew. I mean, all right, we soon after we landed. We went up to a hedge and I fired one shot. Now, I'm quite sure that I or the tank commander didn't know what we were doing. And again, just to talk about the flash, it was quite funny in that we pulled up to this hedge and then we were. I was given a range and whatnot, and we fired one HE shell, and I didn't know at the time, but there was a ditch just on the edge, and a gun was poking over the edges of the ditch, and they were all soldiers in this ditch, English soldiers, and we fired, and I've never seen it like it. The flash came and it comes down into the ditch and frightened the soldiers to death. I wonder if we were doing more harm than what the Germans were. It was really funny. But anyway, I mean, all right, as I said, we fired that one shot. And that was the only time I fired the gun until the night march. And I mean, we were stuck then for months. Well, for a month, weren't we, in a small bridgehead. And I mean, one day, we lost, I don't know, 300 tanks. Purely, I mean, reading about it, you didn't know at the time, because you didn't know what was going on. You were just there, we were getting shelled to hell. I mean, the smell, the stench, I mean, people getting killed all the time. There were cows with the feet turned up in the air, bloated cows, and when you drove your tank forward, you drove over dead bodies, you know. It was absolute chaos and absolutely terrible. It really was terrible. And the smell, and the flies, and the mosquitoes, and there we were, stuck, and I mean, reading about it since, it seems that it was part deliberate, because we were there just holding the might of the German army while the Yankees went round the back and got them in a pincer. But the other thing was that it seems that nobody had realised that, I mean, once we'd got to Caen, then there was a rise in the ground for about 4 miles, and we'd been planning the invasion for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and nobody realised that we weren't going to get up these 400 yards, and we weren't. I mean, we just going in, they were going in and attacking day after day, and I mean, if you read the history of the Canadians, the Canadian soldiers really copped it there. then it was really terrible. And as I say, I'm quite sure that it weren't planned. Couldn't have been planned, because at the finish, and again, I mean, I only know this from reading history, that this Canadian general decided that the only way to get up there was for the tanks to line up at night and march into the ground, which was something the tanks didn't do. You know, I mean, tanks never went out at night, because it's so easy for somebody to jump on top and drop a hand grenade in the top, you know, if you travel along in the dark. As I say, at the time, you didn't know what was happening. And nobody knew what was happening, or they didn't appear to. And we were just there, and each day they'd try for 100 yards, and then when you don't, you just sat down, and I mean, the shells were dropping, and you're lucky if you got out to get some food and whatnot. But we were lucky in the infantry, because at least we got the tanks round that you could sit in. Weren't quite like that all the time, because it was a bit of an hour and you could move in, and we weren't getting shelled all the time, but it was pretty rough, I'll tell you. And as I say, one day, and again, I know this from reading, that we lost over 300 tanks trying to get up that bit of ground. Anyway, what happened was that this Canadian decided that we'd do this, and they decided that the Northamptonshire Yeomanry would lead one of the pincers in, and that the Canadians would lead the other. So that was the Northamptonshire Yeomanry with the Highland Infantry, and some others, Poles and whatnot. And we started doing a week's training for it. We'd got a week. They give us only from reading the books, it appears that they decided that they'd got to do it in a week and that writ. So we had a bit of training, and it didn't consist of very much, because we were told that we were going to just line up and go forward one night. And that there'd be various things to help us. We were going to get radar. Nobody knew what radar were, never heard of it. And we were going to stick something on the front of the tank, which would show you the next tank in front of you, so you didn't lose him in the dark. Never worked, of course. They were going to have artificial moonlight, which is searchlights on the clouds, which actually did work. Lighten things up a bit, and they were going to fire incendiary bullets along the line of march, so that if you watch where the bullets went, you knew that was the general direction you were going to march in. And then we were going to just line up and go one after the other. And this is what we did. And I was in 3 Troop. I'm sure I'm right in the A Squadron led, and 3 Troop were about the third troop that went, you know. And we just started off, and the tank in front went, and we followed on. And it was dark, and you couldn't see where you were going, and there were ditches and potholes and whatnot, and you just went. And being a gunner and an operator, who sat inside the turret, you'd got nothing to do. I mean, it was radio silence, and you weren't going to shoot anything, because I mean, to shoot at you couldn't see anything. The driver was fully occupied, because he'd got a drive, and the tank commander, who was looking out the top, and looking around and whatnot, he was occupied, but we just sat there inside the tank, and of course, after a bit, Jerry realised that something was happening, and all hell let loose, and they just fired the guns at anything. I mean, they were just as bad as we were. They didn't know what was going on anymore than we did. They just fired at anything, which is what they do now, isn't it? They're just talking about Pearl Harbor and the Americans shot their own planes down there. Well, in the night march, they bombed us instead of bombing the Germans. We marched on and on, and eventually, more by luck than judgment, I'm sure, although I think you've got to give credit to the officer who led us there, we did eventually arrive at our destination, which was a village called St. Agnew. And we got there, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And that was about the top of the hill. We'd gone up about this 4 mile up this top of the hill. And we were on the top of a ridge. There was a village, and we went through the village, and they had a fight to get through the village, not us, but the infantry who were with us. Bear in mind that these two columns were a long way apart. I'm not sure exactly how far, but it was a mile at least, or something like that anyway. And what happened, we just went straight on. We didn't bother about any support or anything, they just went. And then in the back, the infantry came along and started to clear the ground in between and fill in like that, you see. And so we were out up in this village. We went through the village, and it was starting to get daylight. And it took about a couple of hours for them to decide where we were going to go and how we were going to be and whatnot. But eventually, we all got set out, and we were. There were all orchards around the top of this ridge, round the village sort of thing. And we were in these orchards, looking out over the top of the ridge into a low valley, which went up on the other side on another ridge, which was 1,200 yards. To the Carnforlays Road, which ran along the top of that ridge, and that's where we were. And as I say, after some hours, we got sorted out, and our troop were sat in this little orchard, looking out over there, and nothing was happening. So we decided we'd have some breakfast. So we all got out and started cooking our breakfast and whatnot, and they left. Well, somebody were on the lookout, and the morning went on and on and on, and eventually they counterattacked, and we didn't know then, but we know now that it was Whitman with his troop of three Tigers, who were the first ones that we saw. Now, somebody saw these three tanks which were coming across our front, and I was the only tank that had got a gun big enough to do anything. But the 75 millimetres, to knock out a Tiger, you had to get within 300 yards of it, at least. And even then, you were lucky if you did anything. We'd got one gun per troop, so that in our squadron, which was set around, we were on the right-hand side, my troop, three troop, and the other troops were set with HQ at the back, and they'd all got one gun each. So they were coming across, and they were coming across at 1,200 yards. The officer decided that we'd wait till 800. So we pulled forward into a firing position, and I could see I could see all three of the tanks now coming across. They were coming across, not in line, but at different, with a fair space between them. And we sat there, and my troop commander was a Sergeant Gordon. My squad, tank commander, Sergeant Gordon, and he said, line up on the back one, up with the rear of the three, which again was standard sort of practice, you know. You got the one at the back, and then you got a chance to get the other two. And we did, and at 800 yards, I got the commander fire, and I fired two shots, and knocked him out. He went up, and immediately again, which was standard practice, was that we were out. We had to come out of the orchard, out of the trees, to fire, because you needed to move your gun around and whatnot. So we backed in to the trees again, ready to come out again and fire the second one. And as we were going back, the second one, Travis, round, and I'll never forget seeing his gun coming round. It looked massive. And he fired at us as we were backing into the trees. And I don't know to this day, there's lots of stories, whether it caught the turret lid, or whether it hit a branch, I don't know, but they say that the turret lid came down on Sergeant Gordon's head. And whatever happened, he jumped out anyway. And I never heard of him or see him again. But the troop officer jumped in and took command of the tank, and we pulled out at a slightly different spot, and fired at the second one, one shot, and knocked him out. And by this time, the first of the three tanks was mulling around a bit, and we backed into the cover again, and came out and fired again, and two shots at him, and dealt with him. And all that took about 12 minutes.
So you knocked out three now, tigers?
Yes, that's right. But in actual fact, I knocked out four, because I knocked out another one in a few minutes. But all this was known because the squadron leader, Captain Boardman then, and Lord Boardman now, came over into our part of the orchard and watched it all, and timed it and took the times and saw everything that happened and wrote it all down. So, you know, there's no way that it can't be proved. It's all there in black and white. And of course, they then found the tanks the next day. But anyway, what happened then? With the three tanks were gone, and we just sat back and waited. And then, after a bit, it was reported that a lot of tanks were coming in from our left. We were on the right, so they were coming in at that direction. And we took up a different position and looked out, and first thing we saw was some infantry were coming up the hill in front of us, a couple hundred yards in front of us, and we gave them a few rounds and they disappeared.
A few rounds of what?
Machine gun ammunition. And then we saw another tank coming towards us, and one shot at him, and I got him as well. And then we just sat there for a few minutes, I don't know how long, not very long, and suddenly there was a big bang, and sparks were flying around and whatnot, and the officer shouted, we're it, get out, and we all piled out, and I got out and turned to where I thought was back, where I thought that HQ would be, and we just ran, and we all ran. Having said that, I did what I should have done, and that was made sure that the gun weren't over the front turrets before we jumped out, because if your gun was over the driver, then it stopped them getting out, you know. So we all got out of the tank. The officer went over, instead of running back, he went over to the squadron leader's tank, and he got wounded on the way over, or so they tell me. I mean, I know now, from now, I only know what I'm reading, read about since then. But I got back to HQ, and again, one of the reasons why I think the army is so awful, I just proved that I was probably the best shot in the regiment, and that's not boasting. I mean, I just knocked out four tigers, and we got back, and during the day, we lost 20 tanks of ours. I think that was because we didn't know what we were doing. And I mean, you know, I'm saying this, I don't think we should have just sat there and got knocked out, which is what we did. I mean, we knocked out these Germans attacking us, and then we just sat there and they picked them all, picked sort of one after the other, you know. We got them, some of them as well. I mean, we knocked out 15 Germans and about five SP guns, but they got 20 of us as well. And so by the evening of that day, I was back with quite a lot of other crews who now hadn't got tanks, and some more tanks came up, and so they built up some new crews. And I say, I just proved that I were an excellent gunner, so they made me a wireless operator in the new crew. And was at the time I thought it was chronic, you know. I'm quite pleased I did, because it actually proved to be a lucky tank. And we went right the way through then to the end of the war. In every action that the regiment went in, and we came through. So it was a lucky move, as far as I'm concerned, because it weren't a very big percentage of people who actually came through without anything, you know. And I could never believe that they'd made me an operator.
When your tank was hit, did it catch fire?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it did. As I say, there were sparks going around the turret, and but we didn't stop long enough to find out. There were bullets flying and whatnot, and I don't think I've ever run so fast in all my life. I ran up the field and to where I thought we ought to go, and you got out of the way as quick as you could. But I'm quite sure it must have done. Nearly, I mean, most tanks burnt like anything, which was a surprising thing.
And you were uninjured when the tank was hit?
No, I weren't injured at all.
And on your wall, you've got, is it a painting of the scene which you've described to me?
Yes, it is.
Who painted that?
Well, that's quite a long story, and it's only recently in the last 2 years. Can we finish the
Yes, we can go back to the painting.
Come back to that.
Yeah, we can back to the painting.
After, I'd like to talk a bit about After the War if I can.
Yeah.
Anyway, as I say, I joined this new tank with a crew, one of whom is still alive. And when we were in all the actions right the way through, we were in the after the night march and this battle, then things seemed to sort themselves out a bit, and we really started to advance again. And so that for the next, I don't know, months, we were just. It was a matter of someone said, "Well, we'll go so and so today," and you tried to go there, and quite a lot of people got killed, but we were lucky and we didn't. But again, I didn't feel that. Anybody knew there were any direction on sort of thing that happened. I said earlier that you didn't fight in tanks in the dark because we were just our tank was sent forward with an infantry section or something, I don't know how many there were, some infantry to take a village. And it was, well, I suppose it was late afternoon when we went. Anyway, when we got to this village, they found it tougher than they thought, so that it got dark, and we got an order to return to the where we were in Arbor, and the infantry major was angry that we were just going to turn around and leave him, and he'd still got to go in and clear the rest of these houses, and there were Germans in the houses, which it's much easier to clear with a tank, you know, you could go up and fire or even drive straight through the house and knock it down, sort of thing. And I mean, he was so angry that, quite frankly, my tank commander disobeyed orders and stuck with him until he had cleared the village. But that's the sort of thing that happened. Mind you, if you'd have heard the things that were said in our tank, because in the tank. If you've got your intercom, which is just talking between yourselves in the tank, you've got your troop net where you can talk between the tanks and the troop, or the commanders can, I know the tank commanders, or you've got the regimental net, you see, so you hear what's going on in other parts of the regiment. And we'd heard this order to go back. And then we heard this infantry bloke talking to our tank commander, and we're their tank commander saying, all right, you're going to start. And if you would have heard the things that he got called, you can imagine. Because, frankly, the one of the good things about it was the relationships between your members of your crew. And unless you'd got it, you were